Today we have what's called the shared pulpit. So we have a few different presenters, and we're all presenting different perspectives on the theme, the sky is the limit. And our presenters will be Susie Rizzo, Sally White, Roselva Unger, and myself. And so first we're going to go with Susie.
Thank you. I'm a facilitator with Alternatives to Violence Project, AVP. We hold workshops for community groups and in prisons throughout the United States and overseas. I prefer to do most of my work at the California Institute for Men in Chino. AVP began in 1975 in the New York State prison system. Inmates at Greenhaven Prison asked a local Quaker group to provide nonviolence training, and the word of training spread. Now, AVP is a spiritual, non-denominational experience. AVP believes that a life lived with dignity, self-respect, and the opportunity for self-actualization is the birthright of every person. However, we see that the society we live in is one of the most violent in the United States. One of the most violent in the world, I should say. And many do not have the opportunity to escape the situations they find themselves in. We believe people do not have to live like that. Each workshop is guided by a team of facilitators, several outside facilitators such as myself, and several inmate facilitators who are inmates. All who attend and facilitate an AVP workshop are volunteers. I would like you all to imagine you're sitting in a circle with about 25 men who are dressed in prison blue. You look around the room in your circle, and you note that most of them are strangers to you. You have probably not spoken a word to any of them. And you see men of various races, and you see people you suspect are gang members or who have been in gangs. All of us are seated and remain so during the workshop. The lead facilitator begins to speak. And he says, "We are all learners and teachers. No one has the right answer for you. Your answers may be different from another's. No one will criticize your response. Everyone is on their own path." AVP believes there is a universal power that is able to transform hostility and destructiveness into cooperation and community. We believe this power is everywhere, in us, in your opponents, and the world around us. AVP calls this the transforming power. Some aspects of transforming power are the appreciation of one's self-worth, a caring attitude toward all other people, and the ability to think before reacting. That's something I'm really practicing. We also seek common ground with others, use humor to diffuse a situation, and listen, practice listening. The lead facilitator turns the workshop over to another. Men begin to get to know each other. Some of the thought-provoking questions that they may discuss with each other or in small group exercises are: a time when power used against me and I felt crushed. Another: a way I react when another expresses anger is. And then again, some things I like about myself and how I am growing. Workshops last 2.5 days. As workshops close, one can feel the temper of the room has changed. Inmates and facilitators have created a safe space, and men are more comfortable expressing caring for each other. Some men weep with newly found vulnerability. Others state how they now have someone to recognize on the yard as they go through their day. Some state how now they feel comfortable with others who are different, but really they're not different. Inmates find they all have something in common. The group grows as a community, and I also feel more insightful and a sense of connection with myself and those around me that I did not have at the start of the workshop. Our common humanity binds us together. I have some brochures that I'll leave on the back table. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. Our next presenter will be Sally White.
Good morning. Good morning. This will be a talk about circles. A circle is a profound, transcendent symbol signifying wholeness, completion, and inclusion, among other beautiful concepts. I'd like to present two of these circular ideas this morning and talk about how our lives can be positively affected by each of them. The first is that idea of inclusion, which is represented so beautifully by this marvelous poem, Outwitted, by Edwin Markham. I've always loved this poem. He drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic, a rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle and took him in. Although Edwin Markham was greatly influenced by the mystical movements of the 19th century, he was a lifelong universalist. His poems are often used as inspirations in sermons, 12-step meetings, prayer groups, self-help groups, as well as theosophical societies. They are often quoted and frequently attributed to anonymous or unknown. In fact, his poems are often more remembered than he. This particular poem has always felt like a prescription for the way to fully live, to let love and I, with the wit to win, draw a circle and take them in. To take in all who need to be included, we all need to have community, a place to share our joys and sorrows, and not just on Sundays. We need friends to celebrate with, to cry with, to get through hard times with, to go on marches with, and to stand up to injustices with, and most important of all, to have fun with. In today's world, there is great divisiveness, a tendency to collect in small, like groups, and to shut out everyone else, particularly if we have a divergent opinion on something we deem to be important. However, there are many ways we can draw a great big inclusive circle and take the many in. We are all human beings and surely have many more things we can agree upon than are those that are different. Our lives can be made richer and more satisfying when we open our hearts and minds and find out the multitude of things that we have in common. And who knows? We might even be able to ramp down some of the political divisiveness so present, ramp it down a notch or two, and discover ways of reaching compromises. We could even find out that we may like some of those people that we don't always see eye to eye with. Now, the second circular view I'd like to discuss. This sculpture is known as the Circle of Friends. another longtime favorite. These sculptures are very popular now and readily available. The Circle of Friends represents the Mayan people of long ago, as their friends would gather around a bonfire to share their hearts and speak of the good qualities of each other and remember time shared. As the embers faded, their friendship was said to be sealed, bringing them closer together. And I have one of these in my family room where we show films and do other things as a group, and sometimes we have the candle lit, so that sort of binds all of us together as a group of friends. Friend sculptures are available today, and they usually feature a ring of friends with their arms intertwined, sometimes with only three figures, but often there are as many as seven, as right here. The figures are not always ancient Mayans anymore, but they might also be quite modern. There's a place in the center of the sculpture for a candle representing the bonfire of ancient times. These are often given to special friends with the idea that the friendship is bonded together forever. I like to think of our congregation as a wonderful circle of friends with whom we can share our lives and our hearts, and at the same time, we can draw that great big circle to invite others in. This dual practice follows all seven of the principles of the UU congregation, especially the seventh, to build a supportive community that eases loneliness and opens hearts. When we build on inclusion rather than exclusion, we can sweep away some of the loneliness in this world and might even include our own. May we all be practicing members of our UU circle of friends as we go about drawing a big, inclusive circle to invite the whole world in. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. Our next presenter will be Roselva Unger.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Those are two facts I will have a hard time following. I know that this congregation has wanted to reach out and has in the past done a study of who our possible friends might be. The answer was non-dogmatic, liberal-minded people, and those seeking a spiritual home. I think our people are non-dogmatic and liberal, if not progressive. But this word spiritual has troubled me in the past, when spiritual sometimes sounded like ghostly and mystical spirits flying around about. Ooh. I've asked friends over the years how they defined spiritual and found that they were looking for a deeper connection, emotional feelings that go beyond words. I find the music moves me in this realm. Thank you to Scott and Scott's companion for this wonderful music. All the wonderful variety that you bring and that the choir brings to us as well. Thank you so much. I love it. Anyway, this reminded me that gratitude is another feeling that raises the spirit. We recite the affirmation each Sunday and go over our principles every month, and these are wonderful guides. However, they become spiritual only if we deepen these words by our caring actions, I think. I have committed myself to seek out at least one person each Sunday to show my gratitude and affection. So now I did more than one. And to get to know them more deeply. In the social and environmental justice team, we are becoming a spiritual community in a very deep sense. Thank you, Sally and Susie. I have been reading two books lately. One is Naomi Klein's No is Not Enough, and the other is People Get Ready by Robert McChesney and John Nichols. Naomi has researched large shocks caused by natural events such as Katrina, terrorism such as 9/11, and only 8 years ago, the economic recession here in the U.S., as well as other shocks internationally. In all cases, these shocks leave people frightened, disoriented, and open to manipulation and to blaming the others, quote unquote, be they blacks or Muslims or whoever. The other book begs us to be ready for the dislocation of jobs and inequality of income and asks us to hang together through these transitional times. They are not traditional. They are transitional. This liberal and spirited congregation may be our best inoculation against despair after a major shock, something that is not an if, but a when, according to many close observers. We are seeing a series of small shocks in these last 7 months. They are clearly a distraction. What if a larger distraction is needed as the presidency weakens? Would war do the trick? Let us strengthen our spiritual community here at UU. In the event of a disturbing shock, Sally White has offered her home as our gathering place, since we don't have a building, where we can share our feelings and support each other with the help of a minister. Do remember that we are our spiritual home, where we are strong when we stand together. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosalva. And I'll be the last presenter. Well, the task was to write a homily of about 4 minutes with the topic of the sky is the limit. Upon hearing the topic, my first thought about the sky is the limit was that that was where one runs out of air, making breathing difficult. That's too short. But then occurred to me that the expression reflected excess, lack of moderation, go for broke sorts of thoughts, and I considered a reverie of my sophomore slump in college, in which I took slumpness to extremes. Too long. I decided then to talk briefly about my good friend Glenn Stockwell. Glenn is now deceased, but for many years we were close friends, colleagues, business partners, antagonists, and collaborators. Glenn's philosophy of life was the sky is the limit. My first position at College of the Redwoods was this as the psychology instructor, and after I was hired, Glenn was hired as the political science instructor. At the time, my family lived in a rundown rental house in a place called Starvation Flats. I was friends with a local poet and mill worker, and he had acquired a book called Volkswagen Repair for Dummies. I boasted to Glenn that with this book, my friend, Mort, and I could fix any VW. Glenn had a VW that was having trouble, so he brought the car over, and Mort and I removed the engine and took it apart. The book, however, was sketchy about how to put it all back together so it would run. Glenn took the whole thing cheerfully and sold the parts to a person who taught in the vocational technical division. What struck me about the whole incident was that Glenn thought it was perfectly normal for two guys who knew virtually nothing about auto mechanics to take his car apart. Glenn was a hunter, a fly fisherman, an ocean fisherman, a writer, a gardener, as well as a family man. For him and his ideas, the sky was barely the limit. As a fly fisherman, he wrote a book on hardy fly reels. He also founded a buy and sell publication for fly fishermen. He dabbled in windsurfing and then purchased a fishing boat to do commercial salmon fishing. I became his fishing and business partner at that point. Glenn took up surfing late in life and at one point was on the board of the California-based Surf Writers, a not-for-profit volunteer group that promotes healthy beaches and a healthy ocean. He passionately loved his wife. He also loved his garden, his cooking, his wine collection, and pretty much anything he became involved with. The last activity that Glenn was involved in before he died was surfing off the entrance to Humboldt Bay, a bay entrance that at the right tide and weather conditions produced some monstrous waves. I had and still have a great affection and admiration for Glenn, but as I was noting his activities and basic philosophy that the sky is the limit, I started thinking about other people in my life who took great chances with no sure possibility of a positive outcome. Susan left her comfort zone of decades in Humboldt County and teaching part-time at Humboldt State University and College of the Redwoods to move with her husband to, of all places, Santa Clarita to teach at College of the Canyons. My son Jake, after earning a bachelor's degree, joined the Army as an enlisted man and took command of a tank on the 1st Armored Division. My son Conrad has adapted to a difficult life after being struck down by a massive stroke at age 44. After 12 years, he retains his sense of humor and capacity for empathy. In the lives of the people in this congregation, in the lives of your families, you no doubt have examples of people near and dear to you who saw the sky as the limit and stepped out of their comfort zone to do something audacious, something even outrageous, but done with a smile and a sense of the joy of life. That's the capacity that makes humans so interesting and so often lovable. Thank you.